House Committee on Judiciary come to order. Today is Wednesday, March 9th, 2011. We're going to go out of order a little bit. The first item on the agenda today will be House Bill 3151. Council.
Chairs, members of the committee, House Bill 3151 adds drug treatment and programs that support drug treatment to the list of allowable uses of forfeiture proceeds, declares an emergency effective on passage.
Thank you, and I'll call forward Chief Reese from Portland, Lloyd Pittman, and Adam Walsh, please. And you can go in any order you'd like, but please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. Chairs Barker and Chairs Krieger and the committee, for the record, I am Mike Reese. I'm the Chief of Police for the Portland Police Bureau. Thank you very much for the opportunity to come and speak to you today. I want to voice the city's strong support for House Bill 3151, which will provide the opportunity to use funds that we get from forfeiture of drug proceeds to use for drug treatment. And I want to thank the chairs and the members of the committee who are sponsoring this legislation. With me today is Mr. Floyd Pittman, and Floyd will tell his story soon, but he is an example of the success we've had in one of our innovative programs in the city of Portland, where we've taken chronic offenders, people that were cycling through the criminal justice system, and we've actually been very successful working with treatment providers and housing specialists and getting these folks into housing treatment and appropriately incarcerating them when necessary to get them sober and then back into treatment. Currently, many crimes are committed by individuals addicted to drugs or alcohol, and the city has shown with this innovative program called the Services Coordination Team that when we focus on these chronic offenders and we try and break the cycle of drugs and alcohol, that we can make a significant impact on their criminal behavior. This is an approach that integrates law enforcement, drug treatment, housing, and social services. This targeted and coordinated approach has resulted in reduced recidivism and long-term financial savings for the entire criminal justice system. Important components of this approach are drug and alcohol addiction treatment and the programs that support them. State law currently limits the number of ways a local government may use monies that are forfeited through drug cases, and those assets are limited in the following four ways: drug enforcement, drug awareness education programs, joint narcotic operations, and to use as currency for buy operations. This bill will add an additional category, drug treatment programs. Essentially, we're having drug offenders, drug dealers pay for drug treatment for the users. And I think this is a very innovative approach. It is strictly at the discretion of local law enforcement agencies, so it doesn't mandate that we shift monies from other programs. It gives us the ability to be creative and work with our social service partners. Being able to use these forfeited funds for drug treatment programs will allow us to reach more individuals like Mr. Pittman. And again, I think in the difficult budget decisions that you have before you, it allows us to tap additional resources that we can then divert money back that we're currently taking out of our general fund or from the county's general fund. We can divert those funds back to social service providers to pay for housing or additional treatment services. And I want to thank you again for the opportunity, and we'll be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Okay, anybody have any questions for Chief at this time? Thank you. Mr. Pittman, please go ahead.
Chair Barker and Chair Krieger, for the record, my name is Floyd Pittman. And the rest of the committee. All I can say is that I'm one of the graduates from the program. I've been in Portland 52 years. I have over 100 arrests, 37 felonies, 27 years in the system so far as on parole and probation. I just got off in January. I'm in school now. I'm at PCC. The program is truly a big changing thing for me. I think the one-on-one counseling there made a tremendous difference. I really can't explain just how much my life has changed, but to not be on parole anymore and to not be committing crimes, I'm coming up on 2 years clean, and the program has been really, really a big change in my life. And that's all I have. If you have any questions.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. You and I looked a little older than the last time we met, I think. You look good. You look great. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And was there an Adam Walsh? Did they want to testify?
Chair Barker, members of the committee, my name is Adam Walsh. I'm with the City of Eugene. We are in support of this bill. Currently, Lane County does not, we don't pursue civil forfeiture cases, but we appreciate the latitude that this offers us, and just wanted to relay that to you today.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Mr.
Mr. Chair, I have a question.
Okay.
Adam,
go
after
him.
Pardon me?
I said, go get him.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You're so kind to me. Why hasn't City ever pursued the civil forfeiture?
I think a lot of it has to do with the amount of the cost involved in pursuing the cases, as well as probably some local politics as well.
Okay. Is that much of a cost? I mean, especially when you're using the proceeds.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wonder, too, though, there is actually an administrative tail attached to civil forfeiture. For instance, you seize a car, and then the case drags on for a year. Where do you store the thing? So cash is one thing, and so I don't know what the answer would be, but as far as that, but there is a warehousing and storage function of forfeiture. Because as the case kind of goes on, you know, it's not decided whether it's going to be government property or otherwise until it's resolved. So that may be something having to do with their lack of, I don't know. That said, I do want to note that that our witness can be credited, I think justifiably, with giving him my start in politics. He hired me when he was the president of the ASUO to be a student senator. And so this was my first political gig. I can thank our witness for that. No conflict of interest.
Representative Tomei.
Mr. Chair, I have a request. Could we ask Mr. Pittman to come back up again? His testimony was so quick, and I just had some questions to ask him, if I might.
Mr. Pittman, please.
It also seems such a shame that you came all the way here, and you gave about a one-minute testimony, and you have a very interesting story, and if it's okay with the Mr. Chair, I'd like to ask you a couple of questions. It sounds like you had quite a history, and I'm just wondering, what turned things around for you? What made you make up your mind that you were going to go down a different path?
excuse me. What I believe happened is I just got out of prison in 2009 in January, and my mom had passed, and my birth father had also passed, whom I never met, and I was pretty much on the verge of just using drugs until it was over, mm-hmm. Kind of suicidal, really. And I have a PO, her name was Denise Boylan, who had told me that I was worth saving. And for some reason, when she said that, I wasn't prepared for it. I believed it. Kind of brought me to tears, and I don't know. I just held on to that, and before I knew it, a couple days later, I was in treatment, and I was able finally to go to my mom's gravesite after 3 years, and say goodbye to her, and. Just being able to have access to counseling 24 hours a day is what, because I've been to a lot of treatment centers. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been to probably like 15 of them. And it was always for somebody else. And it was always to get out of parole, which never worked. And this time, for some reason, I did think about my mom a lot, but I also thought about, I was just tired of doing the same thing. And I can't believe that so much time has already passed, and I still haven't used or broke a law. That used to be commonplace for me. And one thing about even being here in Salem like this is kind of, without being here, without being chained up is weird, because I've come here, I've been to Lane County, Clark County, Multnomah County, I've been to all different counties. I would get on a chain and go to almost every jail here, back and forth constantly. So for me, just to come down here today without being locked up on a bus or a chain was interesting.
I'll bet. Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Pittman, you are worth saving. All of us tell you that. You're an example of the debate that we've had for years about mental health, the counseling,
and a lot of these people can, in fact, recover and become a productive, happy citizen. That's what we want.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. I never, I think that over 30 years of addiction, I got into a tailspin of just not thinking I was worth anything. And then when my father said that he didn't want me, that kind of helped me to think that I was worthless. So I kind of just dropped out of college and dropped out of life. Before I knew it, 27 years had passed.
Thank you very much for coming down today. We really appreciate your testimony.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
And good luck.
Close the public hearing on House Bill 31.
Mr. Co-Chair, before we do that, can I just ask counsel a question?
Yes.
As I'm looking at the bill, it adds drug treatment and programs that support drug treatment to a list of permitted uses for the funds. And the existing statute connects those permitted uses with and instead of or. I just want to make it clear on the record that the use of the word and does not mean that a local agency would have to use the proceeds for all of these uses, but can choose from among them.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nolan, that's my understanding.
Great. Just want to make sure that everybody understands it the same way.
Thank you for putting the intent on the record, Representative. No further business. No further. House Bill 3151 is closed, public hearing. And we'll open a public hearing on on House Bill, we're going to go out of order once again. Public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 2361.
Members of the committee, House Bill 2361 eliminates the culpable mental state requirement for administrative sanctions against liquor licensees and service permit holders to sell to or allow on-premises consumption of alcohol by minors or visibly intoxicated persons. There is also an amendment to that would incorporate much of what, or all of what was House Bill 2641, just for the committee's notice.
Okay. Eugene Tisch, Bill Perry, and Linda Ignowski, please.
Thank you, Chairs. Members of the committee, for the record, Bill Perry with the Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association, and I will start off the show up here, I guess. This is a product of a work group that Co-Chair Barker and Rep. Schaffler has called together over the interim, and I'm, if it's okay with the chairman, just kind of talk about the bill and the amendment. I'm assuming everybody on the committee has the amendment. And basically, when you look at what the amendment does, is the first two lines of the amendment changes line 22 and replaces the first knowingly. The first knowingly deals with the sales, which includes, obviously, that brings in grocery stores and on-premise licensees, and obviously brought in other factors with unions and everybody else. And so what I think the intent was trying to get at by the committee was, how do we prosecute people that are overserved in on-premise establishments? And so when you look at the second part of that, or removing the second knowingly, it specifically deals with the consumption on-premise. So it kind of targets that section that we were after. And then after the committee was done meeting, I think the OLCC, which they can explain, found some other things that needed to be added from their perspective, which were included in 2641. And so the last part of the amendment includes that, and we were agreed upon on the original bill with the work group, and we have said that we do not have issues with adding 2641 if the OLCC feels it's necessary to continue to prosecute these people. So with the Dash 1 amendments, even the inclusion of 2641, we as an industry are okay and agreed upon what we feel came out of the work group in the interim. So with that, I don't know if you want me to answer questions or let everybody speak. Or
please go ahead.
Co-Chairman Barker and Krieger, my name is Eugene Tisch. I am a member of the Oregon State Bar, but I'm not engaged in active practice. I am not here representing anyone but myself. I reside in Wilsonville, Oregon, but my wife and I own and operate the Garibaldi House Inn. It's a 50-room commercial hotel. We operate as a bed and breakfast in Garibaldi, Oregon. That's where a majority of my time is spent. The Garibaldi House is a member of the Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association, but I'm not here representing that organization, speaking on behalf of myself. Our hotel is not licensed to serve alcohol, and so we don't sell or serve alcohol to our guests. We don't discourage them from bringing their own in. We reside or sit across Garibaldi Avenue, Highway 101, from two bars, one of which is more responsible in terms of service of alcohol, the other, which in my opinion is not responsible. And I spend many early morning hours there listening to the sounds and watching patrons come out of the bar, stumble into 101 or crawl virtually across 101, either back to our hotel or less fortunately into the driver's seat of an automobile as they squeal away. It is a serious problem, and it's a problem that I feel that the legislature needs to give better tools to the OLCC and through then the legislative or the statute that allows normal law enforcement, regular law enforcement, to enforce those liquor laws as assistance to the OLCC, to give them better tools in terms to go after that. The current required mental state of proving knowingly really handcuffs them severely. And I think confidential interviews with some of the field personnel would probably disclose a lot of frustration, a lot of loss of enthusiasm as a result of these handcuffs. Alcohol is a mind-altering drug. That's why I personally enjoy responsible use of alcohol. When you start serving it in a service environment, you've got a person whose ability becomes impaired, and as the service goes on, it becomes impaired more. Not to say that there has to be some kind of a fiduciary responsibility, but there has to be a higher degree of due diligence. And it has to be a process that is more susceptible for successful enforcement. I strongly support the provisions of both of these bills, whether they're passed separately or together, and I encourage the committee to give serious consideration to both of those bills. I think the lives of many Oregonians are dependent upon this. Thank you for allowing me to testify, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
And thank you very much for taking the time to come up, and it's always good to hear from citizens. We appreciate the lobby who has all the information, but it's also to put a real human case before us. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Chairman Barker, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Linda Ignowski. I'm the Regulatory Services Director for the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. We appreciate Representative Schaffler's and Representative Barker's effort this last year to try to bring us together, which is unusual for Bill and I to actually be sitting next to each other and agreeing on something, and to work on this serious issue. He kind of said it all for you, but this bill is about saving lives. It's about serving alcohol responsibly and making those who serve alcohol accountable for their actions. As you know, there's over 24,000 DUI arrests per year here in Oregon. We have about 179 deaths. That doesn't include all the injuries and all the physical harm that happens from people who are overserved on licensed premises. This problem is not about the majority of our licensees. It's not about trying to make this easier for us to cite people. It's about setting a reasonable standard so we can hold people responsible for selling alcohol to people who are visibly over-consumed anyway. They should not be allowed to continue to consume. We support this bill. I think Bill mentioned that we suggested adding ORS 471412 to this. And the reason we did that is ORS 471315 is actually the Liquor Commission's sanctionability. It only deals with the sanction of being able to suspend or cancel or fine somebody for allowing somebody to continue to consume. What needed to, we believe needed to coincide with that was the actual statute for allowing a person to consume, which is 412, needed to be consistent, because that also had knowingly in it. So we're just suggesting that the two the languages sync, and so they're exactly the same. So that was the reason we asked for 412 to be added to this. I'll be happy to answer any questions for you.
Are there any questions for the committee? Representative Tomei, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Linda, is it?
Yes.
Linda, help me understand why the law reads on the amendments, lines 14 through 18, especially 16 through 18. For license renewal purposes, the first three violations of this section in a two-year period do not apply in determining the past record of compliance. Help me understand that.
Chairman Barker, Representative Tomei, I can't give you the answer to that. This was in statute way before I became the director. So I don't know the history of why that particular language is there. But no, I don't know if the Restaurant Association knows.
Why was the do added on line 18?
You know what? That's, Chairman Barker, Representative Tomei, I would think that's probably Legislative Council just cleaning up language. We a lot of times see them changing shells. And as we put legislative concept for it, they've been changing shells to something different. So I think that was their suggestion of just cleaning up the language.
So, okay. So if someone, if I may follow up, Mr. Chair, thank you. So if there, you're not even going to get a letter of reprimand until there have been three violations, right?
Chairman Barker, Representative Tillman, they get, every time there's a violation, they would get a letter of reprimand. It takes, so it would be three letters of reprimand within a two-year period. If they get a fourth one, it's cancellation of the liquor license. And that's kind of what we've said it in our sanction schedule. But they get, there's no fine for the first three violations. It's only a letter of reprimand. And then at the fourth one, it's a proposed cancellation.
So there's nothing between letters of reprimand and closing it down? Is that right?
Wow. Chairman Barker, Representative Tomei, that's the way the law's been for many years. And I can't give you the legislative history on that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Schaffler.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was inspired. We had this conversation in the past, but there was an article in the newspaper after the session ended 2 years ago, and it was about two young women being tragically killed from a drunk driver who left an establishment that, if I remember right, has somewhat of a record. But our friend Ms. Zygnowski was quoted saying, "We've tried for several sessions to do something, and the legislature did not act." So I must say, though, going from no licensee or permittee shall knowingly allow to a licensee or permittee may not, it's a big change in a very small sense. So I appreciate the efforts on the department and all the stakeholders, and it'll be effective and prevent more of these tragedies out there in public. So thank you for all your work. I appreciate it.
Okay, and Representative, thank you for your efforts in calling those meetings together. Appreciate that. Is there any further discussion? Representative Wan.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. So I'm looking at the amendment, and I want to have a good, clear understanding of what it is that we're intending to do with regard to the word knowingly in line 22. So the original law has it in two different places to make clear that the disjunctive sentence on either side of the or, that each instance requires a knowing violation. And we're going to remove that in both instances in the bill, intending to create strict liability for both types of violations. And then the amendment is going to add it back into the first portion of the disjunctive sentence. Am I right on that so far?
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
But we don't want to add it back, follow up, but we don't want to add back the knowingly to the second portion of the disjunctive sentence, right?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you. So maybe what we can do, just as a very humble suggestion, why don't we break this sentence up into two different subsections so that future young lawyers trying to read this won't try and figure out whether knowingly applies to both or not, because they're not going to be able to easily take the time to look up the legislative history and realize that knowingly was originally in both places and now it's only one, and that means it's not in the other. And I know that'll cause a delay, and Representative Schaffler, I apologize for that. I know, but I really think for clarity's sake, we could probably save some litigation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Indeed, I'm glad you caught that. I mean, the case law does tell us that the mental state is to be attributed to all elements in the crime, and that's typically a crime is identified by the sentence that it's in, and so that's true. That would be probably connected to everything in the sentence. Otherwise, so okay. I echo the representative's.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
We don't have to do anything today. I have no problem with that language being made. Make sure everybody reads it and understands it and digests it and comes back and says how happy they are with it.
Okay, thank you very much. Any more questions for the panel?
Thank you, Mr. Kosher.
I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2361. And with the intention of going to LC to get that sentence separated so that it's clear to everybody. Thank you very much. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2678. Mr. Marquis, and come up first. And Simmel, you want to come up too as well?
Chairs and members of the committee, House Bill 2678 increases the bad check fee from $25 to $35, declares an emergency, and is effective on passage.
And Betsy Earls, please.
We've got Sybil surrounded now.
Yeah.
co-chairs, members of the committee, Jim Marquis, today representing Oregon Collectors Association, as well as the Consumer Data Information Association. House Bill 2678 makes a couple of what we consider important changes to ORS 30.701. This statute was originally enacted as 30.700 back in 1981, and at that time created a fee that would be allowed to be charged by folks who had checks written to them when the check was dishonored, non-sufficient funds, or closed account, or whatever. That fee was established at $25. The statute in sub 5 on page 2 of the bill is the substantive changes that we seek, lines 1 and 2. The present language says you can charge a reasonable fee representing the cost of handling and collecting on the check, and that the total fee for any single check may not exceed $25. It's a very straightforward bill. We've deleted the language regarding reasonable fee representing cost of handling and collecting and inserted simply a fee not to exceed $35. That would be a $10 increase, which we think is pretty reasonable given that it's been 30 years. I've included with my testimony, if you turn to the second page of my testimony, from the Consumer Price Index calculator on the Oregon Employment Department's website, $25 worth of goods in January 1981 would require $63.28 to buy the same goods in January of 2011. So if we were to take the CPI on this $25 fee to and just apply the CPA to it, the fee would be $63.28. So we're taking it to $35. We think that's pretty darn reasonable, given that it's been so long. The other issue, however, is just as important, and that is that when this statute was developed 30 years ago, we probably lived in a less litigious society than we do today. And we used the word reasonable fee. Most retail establishments that charge this kind of fee charge the same fee for every check that gets returned to them. It might be $25 or it might be $20, but they post a sign and say, we charge $20 or $25 for a return check. There are only five states in the nation that use language, and virtually every state has some kind of a statute that allows the charging of a fee for a return check by a retailer. But there are only five states that use language similar to this reasonable fee. And in another state, there were some trial lawyers who raised this issue of reasonableness and alleged that a retailer should be looking at each individual check and establishing what is a reasonable fee in this individual circumstance, in this individual situation. And I submit to you that that is just virtually impossible, and what we really need is to just have a standard fee that applies to all checks without going through that kind of process. So with that, I'll close my testimony. These are two important changes that we think are reasonable and needed, and this will help retailers in Oregon recover their costs of collecting on these checks, and I would just say that many times their costs do exceed the $35. So with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Betsy Earls, appearing on behalf of Associated Oregon Industries and the AOI Retail Council. Fewer of our retail members are accepting checks these days, and the reason is that it becomes more and more costly to collect when checks are dishonored. Many of our larger members employ a service such as E-Verify, which they can be reasonably certain about the checks that they're receiving, but especially our smaller members might not be able to afford that, frequently are not able to afford that. Thus, if they choose to accept checks for the convenience of their customers and one of those is dishonored, they have a few options, and none of those are free to them. They can call the check writer every day and try and collect on the check. They can call the bank every day to see if money has been put into that account, and they can collect on the check. Or they can turn it over to a collection agency, and collection agencies are effective, frequently effective, but they take a cut, too, out of the check. So none of these things are cheap or even free. The time that retailers would have to spend collect on each check, we think, certainly warrants a small increase in the fee that is charged for a dishonored check, and therefore we support 2678.
Thank you. So. Co-Chair Barker, Co-Chair Krieger, and members of the committee, Sybil Hebb here from the Oregon Law Center to express concern and opposition to the bill. Our Law Center's mission is to achieve access to justice for low-income communities. As you all know, low-income populations in Oregon are struggling now more than ever. While we do understand that the proposal is a small percentage of the CPI, it's actually a 33% increase on the fee that's currently charged. And I think it's relevant to look at the rationale that the legislature was using when they passed the bill in 1981, and it does include language that indicates that the fee ought to be reasonable. I agree with Mr. Marquis that that's no longer really the practice and that the flat fee is charged of $25, that can mean under the bill that a $35 fee could be assessed on a check that was as low as $2, for example, that bounced. And so there isn't a match between the amount of money that was dishonored and the fee that's being charged. And so I would encourage the legislature to be cautious about increasing the fee at this time when it's particularly, given our economy and the struggles that everyone is having to meet their basic needs and to, you know, they're down to the wire doing the math calculations, a small mistake can result in a check bounce, and then additional fees on top of that can snowball and put people into an extremely bad situation. I do appreciate and understand the employers' concerns and collectors' concerns, and certainly don't speak in favor of dishonored checks, but it does happen sometimes, and when it does, those fees can put people into an even worse situation. So for those reasons, we would oppose the bill and impose any increase at this time on fees charged for dishonored checks. So.
Thank you. Any questions? Sybil, I would ask, just off the top of my head, it seems to me like the people who make small charges where they don't have the money is usually the credit card, where you do it, where you swipe a credit card, and then so you have a small $3 or $4 charge, and then you get hit with these fees. We're actually sitting down to write a check. Seems to me to be a little different, and people aren't usually writing. I don't think they're writing many checks for $2 and $4 and things.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, that's a good point. I think very few people, fewer and fewer people, are writing checks. Period. These days, and I think you know. It depends. I mean, you may not have your debit card with you. You may not have a debit card, you know, and so I think those smaller amounts do get written, and the bill would apply to those. And so so that's part of our concern. But, you know, it's also, while it is a small increase in the CPI, it is a significant increase in the fee, percentage-wise. And so just given where we are in today's economy and how much people are struggling, I think that's the matchup that we're concerned about. So.
Okay. And thank you. I have noticed in the past where it depends, like who's saying percentage and who's saying dollar amounts and all across the board on each side of the position. So I appreciate the testimony today. Thank you very much. I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2678. And open a work session on House Bill 2274. Council, if you could remind us.
Chairs, members of the committee, House Bill 2274 permits certified peace officers from adjoining states to operate as peace officers in Oregon within 50 miles of the shared border in response to another out-of-state officer's request or in an emergency. There is a -1 amendment that clarifies that the bill would apply to local as well as state law enforcement persons and entities, and it clarifies that mutual aid agreements would control if there were any. There's no revenue impact. There is a fiscal statement. And the issues discussed were whether or not other states have similar statutes and the fact of mutual aid agreements and multi-jurisdictional task forces for law enforcement purposes. Okay, and the bill was heard, I'm sorry, on February 26th.
And we have not added the amendment yet?
That's correct.
No, okay.
Mr. Chair, I move that the -1 amendments be put into House Bill 2274.
Representative Krieger moves the -1 amendments into House Bill 2274. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Chair, I move that House Bill 2274 as amended to the floor with a due pass.
Representative Krieger moves House Bill 2274 to the floor with a due pass. Recommendation. Is there any discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative Nolan.
Yes.
Representative Olson.
Aye.
Representative Shoffler.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Representative Wong.
Aye.
Representative Woodman.
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Hicks.
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Garrett.
Aye.
Co-Chair Krieger.
Aye.
Co-Chair Barker.
Aye.
Motion carries, and we will ask Representative Garrard to carry the bill on the floor. Is there any further business to come before the committee today? Adjourned.